Welcome back to the Wealth Actually podcast, the show that features artists, entrepreneurs, experts, and commentators that will give you the right knowledge, planning, and guidance so you can preserve your assets and enjoy your wealth. Learn more and subscribe today at wealthactually.com. This podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes. It is neither investment, legal, nor tax advice and does not represent the opinions of the employers of the host or guest. And now, here's your host, Fraser Rice.
Welcome back to the Wealth Actually podcast. I'm Fraser Rice. We are doing something a little different today, and that is video. And so our first guinea pig at this is Christopher Holtby of Wealth Advisors Trust Company based in South Dakota. We're going to talk a little bit about the trustee function and how having a dedicated trust offering can help an RIA, and also good practices in terms of choosing that option and also the general workflows around that. In the meantime, Chris put his dogs away because even though our four pod friends are always welcome on a podcast, we didn't want them barking. But anyway, Christopher, thank you for coming on.
Anytime, Fraser. I enjoy it.
So let's start a little bit about your background and how you came to get into the trust world.
So I'm actually one of four co-founders, and we were at Ernst & Young in the family office group, and we noticed advisors getting fired actually quite a bit and when their clients died. And so what we noticed was they were getting fired because clients had named some competing trust company, Frost, PNC Bank, Northern Trust. And so one of my business partners said, look, why don't we create a trust company designed just for wealth advisors? And so 15 years ago, on May 12th of 2009, Wealth Advisors Trust Company was created to solve three problems for advisors.
Fire away at the three.
How to grow revenue, how to retain AUM, and how to increase wallet share using an advisor-friendly trust company.
So you were on the forefront, really, of the bifurcation of the trust administration function and investment management. As I go back to my Wilmington trust days, I'm always sort of remembering that the three major functions of a trustee are to administer slash safeguard slash report on the assets. The trustee is in charge of investing the assets, and the trustee is in charge of distribution. And so it sounds like where you slot in is in the administration side of things, and maybe a little bit on the distribution side when there's structure required around those decisions.
So that's actually kind of interesting, and we are different than some of our peers. I think it's something like 90% of our trusts were the distribution trustee, and that's because 98% of our business comes from financial advisors, whereas a lot of our peers get business from estate attorneys. We just found more of an affinity because we all used to run money. So we understand what their workflow is, what their stresses are like. We've sat in their seats. So that's just what we focused on.
So one of the things in terms of that workflow for an RIA in general, maybe other asset managers, is the concept of custody. And I know a lot of trustees really are interested in how that works because they're in charge of safeguarding the assets. They want to know about these things. And then the intersection with the different RIAs can be interesting because they have favored custodians like Schwab or Pershing or Fidelity or somebody else. How do you deal with that component?
So we believe that an independent trust company should be custodian neutral. So that throws out Schwab and Fidelity, because if you use their trust companies and you change custodians, you've got to change the whole kit and caboodle. So really what's important is you got to have an API feed into whoever it is, right? We have advisors using Goldman, Morgan, Merrill, State Street, Fidelity, Schwab, Pershing, Axos, Altruist. So really, you've got your tech stack has to be really tight to have those API feeds to make all that happen. And then it becomes relatively academic after that.
And so essentially, you're taking the information that happens at the custodian level and then mirroring that on your statements?
Correct. And then it goes into our principal and income systems. And then that generates the actual statement. And what we've done is we've made those statements look purposely ugly because we don't want it to compete with what the advisor's reporting with Orion, Black Diamond, Addepar, you know, whoever that is. So we're just reporting transactions, money in, money out, that sort of thing.
And that principal and income distinction is important because typical custodians really don't do that. And the P&I delineation is important for the trustees ultimately in either sort of divvying out fees or making other distinctions as it relates to those assets.
Distributions and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Spot on, Fraser.
So let's talk about the independence component for a minute. The concept of staying in your lane from a corporate perspective is key. And you're obviously not managing money because the RIAs wouldn't put up with that very quickly, or very not only not quickly, but at all, if they had a little bird over their shoulder, you know, suggesting something else. How do you define that independence, and how do you make sure that's important going forward?
So what we view as table stakes of being an independent trust company is they're in one of seven states, which geographically would be Tennessee, Delaware, New Hampshire, South Dakota, Wyoming, Nevada, Alaska. They need to be in one of those seven states. They need to offer a non-compete guarantee. Pretty straightforward. And they need to be truly custodian neutral. So if those are what we consider the very basic requirements to be an independent trust company.
So the independence is established. We have an idea vis-a-vis custodial independence or neutrality, meaning you use whomever the advisor wants at that point. Then given the nature of the trust situation and the bifurcation of the function, do you have any thoughts or responsibility over the RIAs and how they do things, or is that completely separated out?
So there are two different types of trusts, which is a directed trust, where the trust document directs us to use ABC advisor firm, and then we're held harmless on whatever happens on the investment side. Then there are delegated trusts, which is where we delegate the investment authority to the advisor. And then we share with the advisor that investment fiduciary risk. Right now, I think we're at 68% are directed. So that makes it a very straightforward purpose. I would say there's about 40 trust companies that serve advisors. 10 to 12 are truly independent, and the rest have bank departments that offer these services to advisors. And those would be firms like BOK, CoAmerica, RBC, Midwest, and there's all sorts of smaller regional banks that do the work. The problem with those subsidiaries is they do compete against advisors, and their trust officers aren't steeped in the lore of what it means to be an advisor, to be creative, to be responsive, to be measurable and accountable. So we really think the real solutions for advisors are about 10 to 15 companies in the country that are truly independent.
So you've put your tent stakes down in South Dakota. And does that limit what you can do in other jurisdictions?
So we have reciprocity in 25 other states. And then you've got the UTC code along with that. So we've always moved the governing law back up to South Dakota. But because we have reciprocity, we don't always have to do that.
So let's talk a little bit about in dealing with RIAs, that implies you're really only worried about or really tasked with worrying about liquid assets, maybe LPs for things like private equity and hedge funds and so on. What's the process around the LP and the hedge fund world? Are you signing the documents at the, let's call it the direction of the RIA? And does that work the same way in that delegated situation?
So if an advisor wants to use alternative investment management, we cannot allow that underneath a delegated trust, because then we're on the hook saying we are experts in this area and we're not signing those documents. So really, we only allow hedge funds, private equity, VC, private credit, whatever, on directed trusts. Because then the advisor, as the investment trustee, is the fiduciary and can sign those documents.
So in a sense, in that delegated world, the hedge fund and alternative space is probably somewhat off limits if they're working with you?
Completely off limits, right? Because what trust companies do a really bad job at, Fraser, is explaining they see the world in risk and time. And those are very clear factors, what are risk and time. So if you explain it that way, advisors are like, oh, okay, I get it. But most trust companies, you know, meander around what they mean, why they won't do it. It's just, it's not worth the risk, and they're not willing to take the risk. So you charge based upon factors that you can measure, and then it makes it very straightforward and just easy to work with.
So let's dive in a little bit. If we get past, let's call it the, I'll call it the quote unquote liquid alternative assets, which is something you'd probably find on a Morgan Stanley platform or similar RIA situation, and then go into something different, like say LLCs that hold real estate or private business interests. Where does your appetite land on those types of situations?
So what you need is those LLCs need to be manager managed. There needs to be a trust protector or an investment trustee who has the sole fiduciary risk and authority to remove, appoint, and elect the LLC manager. When that happens, we're no longer responsible or liable what's happening inside of that LLC.
And then let's dive into things like you hear a lot about all the different Panama papers and other papers and situations involving international clients and sort of where money laundering begins and ends and that type of thing. Do you draw any lines vis-a-vis international business?
We do. So we wanted to keep our lives very straightforward. So from day one, we just said U.S. citizens, U.S. beneficiaries, U.S. assets. That's it. There are other, there, we have peers who will take international, you know, firms like Bridgeford and Sterling and South Dakota Trust Company. And that's great for them. Just capitalism affords the opportunity of choice. And so our choice was to keep it very straightforward and simple.
How does the pricing work on this?
In terms of if you have international or if you...
No, in general.
In general, so really a trust fee, something I said earlier, is around risk and time. And so risks could be, is it directed or delegated? How many distributions are there? How many beneficiaries there are? How big is the trust? What does the trust own? Does it own LLC assets? Those are all factors that go into an algorithm that gets reviewed annually of what the fee should be.
And essentially, do you think about it in terms of a basis point fee, or is it more flat, or is that something that you decide upon the level of work and risk and those types of factors?
So LLCs are flat pricing with a graduated scale, and then marketable securities are a basis point scale.
One thing that's popped up in my practice, and I think generally amongst the legal community, is the Corporate Transparency Act. So we start talking about LLCs and, you know, sometimes things owned in corporations, et cetera. Where do your responsibilities begin and end? And you're allowed to say, I don't know, because I think a lot of people are trying to decide that even as we speak. How are you thinking about that from your firm's perspective?
So we hired an outside consultant, and we've built something on Salesforce that when we're onboarding trusts, we identify, do we or do we not have responsibility? And then we take it over from there. And then we started this last March. And so this was like a 6-month project, all automated on Salesforce. And so if there's an address change, it gets triggered automatically for the trust officer to be like, oh, we got to file with FinCEN. So what we do, look, trust administration is nothing more than supply chain management. There's manual activities and there's creative activities. And the modern day trust companies are using technology to do a lot of the manual work.
Let's think about the future in the next year to, few years coming. The wealth transfer is big and real. Everybody's predicting it. You and I would probably agree that as the tsunami is on its way, the size of the transfer, who knows, but let's assume it's huge. As you look into your crystal ball regarding the structure around the wealth transfer, what are you seeing as opportunity and risk?
The risk is putting your head in the sand and saying, I will never need to work with a corporate trustee. That's the risk. And advisors are doing that are going to miss out on this flow of money or the current money being managed by bank trust departments. So what we're seeing and my peers are seeing is RIA firms or advisors working for independent broker dealers or hybrid RIAs, where they tell their clients, their centers of influence, hey, did you know we can take irrevocable trust business away from bank trust departments and manage those trust investments? They're growing much faster than their peers. What it also does is allows them to capture legacy assets going from G1 to G2, G3. And so really the advisors there are really focusing on the philosophy of their clients' money and their family and working with estate attorneys to make sure that if a corporate trustee is needed, that they're added as the advisor and working with an advisor-friendly trust company. So that's the opportunity. And the other thing is there's around $4 trillion in irrevocable trusts managed by bank trust departments. RIA is sort of in the $1.5 to $20 billion range are using firms like us to go after and to close that business. So they'll have us on calls with prospects to close that business, firing a Northern Trust or a Co-America or a PNC or JP Morgan Trust Company. They'll use us to help close the business. Because the advisor, clients will talk to the advisor about their $7 million taxable account. But if there's a $10 million trust account, the client or prospect wants to talk to the trustee. So they use us as part of their closing tool. I mean, I'm in a different city every single week, and that's what the top advisors are using us for.
I see it in my practice, whether it's your trust company or others, the concept of unbundling that feature so that it gets away from sort of the bundled offering in a bank trust department, et cetera. Again, you're putting the right people in the right roles and they stay in their lane as opposed to putting people in place where it's not their core business model. And to that end, a comment before, and I'm interested in your opinion on this, RIAs who think that building their own trust company is a good idea. I've seen that elsewhere where I feel like there's a lot of attempts to make business stickier. And in doing so, they've done something very expensive and very difficult to manage. And I'm wondering whether you think, I'm sure you do, because you probably see it in different forms, whether you think that's a trend that is come and gone and will come again, or whether it's something where people are starting to learn that trust administration and the trustee with a capital T business is a lot different from, let's call it, the wealth management business.
So I'll tell you a story. There are two firms that wanted to buy us that created their own trust company. And one of the CEOs said, our own advisors don't want to use our trust company. We need someone who's really good on, the boring stuff. And it's really hard to build a trust company that can work really simply and easily with advisors. And then you also have private label, right? Where an advisor firm will say, we're advisor, we have advisor trustee services. So they're held accountable if anything goes bad, because there's another firm, the trust company, doing all the work. And we see a big change away from that as well. The big firms like Beacon Point, Buckingham, Cerity, the 10, $12 billion RIAs, they're all going to the outsource model. So what's interesting is there's the shift away from the private label because of the reputation risk to the advisor. And really, I think one advisor said it best. The client goes, so who do I yell at if I don't get a distribution? You? Or like the trust company behind you that I don't even get to talk to?
You want to find the place that has the sign above the door that says, abandon all hope, ye who enter. If you're the RIA, you don't want that. So
no, you don't want that. So really what we see in the model that's going forward is the RIA is the thought leader, and they are doing best of class to custody, CPA, insurance, investment, trustee services. They're finding and using and firing or whatever they need to do best of class. That's what we see the big RIAs doing.
Tracks with my experience as well. Chris, really good to have you on. Any parting thoughts, any other ideas that we didn't catch?
I think the gotchas working with an independent trust company, make sure that the language has removal power, that the beneficiary can remove a corporate trustee and appoint another corporate trustee, no court, no judge, no reason, just because. So removal language. And what that tells you is if a trust company like us feels comfortable being removed for being a bad job, we're just going to work harder. Make sure there's no termination fee. And then also make sure that they are truly custodian neutral and that they're helping you in ways above just doing trust administration, you know, growing revenue, retaining AUM, even strengthening client bonds. Like, we help advisors, we give them ideas how to help their clients choose a better family trustee. Doesn't mean they're going to use us, but it's ideas of how advisors can strengthen that bond. So things like that.
Terrific. Chris, how do we find you?
WealthAdvisorsTrust.com, or I think you could even search advisor-friendly trust company and we'll appear somewhere on the top near Google. So that's it.
Super. Chris, thanks for being on.
Oh, thank you so much, Fraser. Great questions. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Wealth Actually, hosted by Fraser Rice, author of the book Wealth Actually and a leading private wealth manager. Head on over to wealthactually.com where you can subscribe to this podcast, get your own copy of the Wealth Actually book, and connect with Fraser directly. We'll see you next time on Wealth Actually. Fraser Rice is an employee of Next Capital Management, LLC. This podcast is not investment, legal, or tax advice, nor does it reflect the opinions of Next Capital Management. Any opinions represented in the show are Fraser's individually and not an endorsement of the guest.